Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us for today's Healthline. This is where we like to focus on ways to live a healthier, happier, and pain-free life. I'm Courtney Butts, your host, and we'll be taking your calls and answering your questions live in the studio today. We'll be opening the phone lines soon, but as a reminder, please make sure you're in a quiet room when you call with your TV turned all the way down so that we can hear your question. Our number is 318-219-4569. Today we are talking about neck and back pain. Joining me to talk about this is Dr. John Reeves, a neurosurgeon from Willis-Knighton Spectrum Neurosurgery. Good afternoon and thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about, you're a neurosurgeon, so tell me a little bit about what you do for patients that have maybe pain along the spine.
Well, as neurosurgeons, we are involved in the diagnosis and management of patients with spine disorders. So most commonly we'll get a referral from another doctor, for instance, of a patient who they ask us to assess and see what the problems are and see about the best way to manage it. Mm-hmm. And that can include a lot of non-surgical things. Mm-hmm. And plus, if surgery is to be applied, which one's the most appropriate, things like that.
Right, so it's very individualized. So you look at the patient holistically and say, you know, we'll start with the non-surgical options first, manage it, and then maybe progress to a specific.
In general, that's true. Sometimes, you know, things have different urgencies, and sometimes we have to forego, you know, depending on the presentation, what the patient's complaint is. Sometimes we move promptly to surgery, and other times we go through all the other things that are frequently very effective.
Okay.
Sometimes patients can avoid surgery.
Gotcha. So how common is something like neck and back pain for Americans today?
Oh, it's a very common condition. At least it's estimated something like 80% of people at some time in their lifetime was going to have a significant bout of spine pain. Mm-hmm. Fortunately for most of it, that seems to be a single event or maybe goes down to something that's small and manageable and people don't seek medical care for.
Right. Go ahead.
And for a subset, it continues to bother them, and those are the patients who, you know, show up to the doctor and asking for help.
Right. Yeah, so that kind of leads me into, when should someone worry if they do have this chronic pain or maybe even a random pain that's happening, developing recently?
Well, there's kind of two different subsets of patients you've asked about in your question. One is the ones that have a sudden problem.
Mm-hmm.
We call them acute problems. And that can be acute or abrupt onset of a severe pain. It can be purely spine pain and provoked sometimes by an activity such as a pick up something heavy in the wrong posture and sometimes get an abrupt pain and a spasm. Other times it's a neurologic symptom where pain will go screaming down the arm or the leg. It happens all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Those are acute presentations.
So
fall, particularly with our elderly population, if they fall down and develop sudden pain, since sometimes they're more fragile, they fall a little bit heavier than somebody who's younger.
Right.
They fracture things. And so
mm-hmm.
there's, you know, if I say an acute and incapacitating pain of any type, you should go to the emergency room or call your doctor and try to get a prompt assessment of it.
Right.
Other problems are more chronic. They develop slowly over time and just become a bothersome issue, where patients might be okay when they're doing nothing, but whenever they try to do something, that they're inhibited by pain, and that's another type of workup.
Right. Yeah. So take me through some non-surgical treatments that you typically will implement with a patient.
Well, after we've looked at them, we try to size them up and see what the nature of the problem is. So a lot of it just goes into the diagnosis of examining the patient, hearing their story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the professor used to say the patient's going to tell you what their problem is if you ask enough questions. and you examine them. You look at their exam as pertains to the spine, like their flexibility and their movement patterns and gait and muscle strength, and you size them up in general. What's their general picture of health? Are they an older person with many health problems, or are they somebody who's just not very good physical fitness shape? And you try to put all those into your basket of things you think about when you're telling them what the best course is.
Right, yeah. And so I notice, you know, myself even sitting like this, looking at my phone, looking down. Mm-hmm. Is this an issue for people, you know, the bad posture? Does this maybe contribute to the chronic pain long term?
It can. I mean, there's things written in the therapy world about the flexed posture we're in all the time. Flexion means going forward like
gotcha.
This. So you look on your phone, that head's out front, the weight of your head's in front of your shoulder girdle. So that mm-hmm. puts strain on the neck muscles and also on the tendons and ligaments and the joints of your neck.
Right.
Same thing when you're sitting. The spine is strongest when it's in normal posture. It has a little S curve when you look at it from the side. That's the way it's designed to be at its most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so deviations from that, particularly if you do them every day, people tend to work and move in the same patterns every single day. Whether you be sedentary, you're going to sit mm-hmm. in your chair, be at your computer like this all
right.
day long, and then wonder why you can't mow the lawn that weekend. It's part of it's deconditioning, part of it is muscle shortening, ligament shortening and all those sort of things.
Gotcha. Yeah, so tell me a little bit about like a degenerative condition that we mentioned earlier. Is this something that happens over time?
It is. I mean, yeah. the most common risk factor for degeneration of your spine is age. It's just time around the clock, and the many times you've nodded your head and looked over your shoulder or bent down to pick up the laundry, you've done that millions of times in a lifetime. So a lot of it's just standard wear and tear on the joints. It doesn't mean necessarily it's diseased, because I have it. I mean, my x-rays look awful, but I have no spine pain at all. So I couldn't say I have spine disease.
Right.
I have aging of the spine.
Gotcha.
It's only when you start to get that dysfunction where it affects your capacity to do things that we start to call it a disease.
Right. That's a good distinction there, because as you mentioned, you know, with age you'll see this, but it's when the pain, that's when you should be worried, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So take me through some of the surgical options. Well, first, let's go ahead and go to a question that we have with a viewer. Foster, what is your question?
Well, I have neck pain. I had surgery about 25 years ago. I'm 75 now.
Uh-huh.
And I had a fixation put in my neck, and I did well. Now that I've gotten older, I think I'm developing some arthritis in that area, because I have pain when I turn my head to the left, and I develop a muscle spasm in my neck all the way up into my head about 3 or 4 times a day.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not interested in surgery. But I was wondering if there was something else I could do to stop those muscle spasms and give me a little bit more comfort in my neck.
Sure. Well, he describes a pretty common condition of people who've had surgeries, probably successful surgery. 25 years ago, they were doing very good spine surgery. I've been in practice longer than that, so we did good work back then. But sometimes over the years, I assume he had a fusion surgery is what he was describing. And the next door neighbor joints can start to wear and tear because that load is distributed on the next door neighbor joints and not across a fusion. So that is probably what his problem is. But what he first needs is a diagnosis. So you need to see an experienced spine provider, probably a surgeon since you've had surgery before. Just
someone
kind of
like you, I guess?
Like me. We're not going to throw you down and do surgery right away. We first have to get a diagnosis and try to figure out the best course. There's probably lots of things he could try, like physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just joints need to be limbered. Maybe some medicines added in to help with the arthritic component.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes just those two things, getting the neck a little bit stronger with some exercises and things can be all he needs.
Right.
If that's not enough, if appropriate, maybe it's try an injection or two in the neck. Sometimes that'll give you enough to relief to allow you to participate in the physical therapy and get stronger.
Yeah, good advice. So. Awesome. Yeah, so thank you, Foster, for your question. And if you're just joining us and you have a question for our doctor, you can give us a call at 318-219-4569. All right, so we just mentioned surgery as an option. So tell me a little bit about the different options. Are there different types of surgeries that you can do for these people that are experiencing chronic pain?
Yes, I think the simplest surgeries we do are, we just call them simple nerve decompressions. So if you think about the spine, it's a column, that central strut of your body, and it's got a hole down the middle where your main spinal cord and the big trunks of nerves travel, and then at each individual joint a nerve gives off. So some people present with sciatica. Most people have heard the word sciatica, means pinched nerve going down the leg. And if it's attributable to a nerve root being compressed, the simplest thing we do would just be decompress the nerve root and get back out, and hope that the body's capacity to heal itself and some therapy and things like that will get them over the hump.
Right.
So that we do that in the neck sometimes, sometimes in the mid back, sometimes in the low back. So that'd be the simplest thing we do surgically. Okay. We treat conditions like stenosis, where it's a bundle of nerves getting compressed rather than a single one, and that presents in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in the neck and you have your spinal cord squeezed, you're going to have a characteristic condition we call myelopathy or spasticity, and those would be the ones we might more urgently take to an operating room.
Mm-hmm.
Other in the low back, people get stenosis, where they might be okay sitting down and doing nothing, but they can't walk across the room without cruising on the furniture like an infant does, or maybe they need walkers, and when they start to stand up straight, the legs weaken out. Those would be decompressed. So that'd be the simpler things, and then it goes on from there to various types of fusion procedures, where we goal of that being to lock a joint or two and keep those joints from moving, and by doing that, the nervous elements around those joints become quiet.
Gotcha. Very cool. So let's say, you know, I feel like we all deal with aches and pains at some point in our life. So what are some typical signs and symptoms that you see as a neurosurgeon, you know, for someone that may need surgery or may need medical attention?
Well, off by the time they get to me, it's been in place for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about a routine office consult. You know, so these patients typically have had problems for at least a couple of months. Generally, for a lot of things, your own body can heal these pains and strains, and even small disc herniations, your body can kind of take care of it on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time you get to me, it's usually a sciatica pain, a pain running down the leg, or it might be weakness in a set of muscles that the nerves go to, and so they'll sometimes have a gait abnormality. And you check the muscles that are responsible for any particular nerve, and you say that nerve's badly compromised.
Gotcha.
Same thing happens in the arms. You find a weakness in the arm or severe pain down the arm.
Gotcha. So is this like a dull ache, or is this a sharp shooting pain that people typically feel?
I would say both.
Both, okay.
There's often a background of the duller ache in the joint, but the shooting pain that goes down the arm, sometimes associated with tingling, tends to be a nerve component. And so it can be a blend of those two things.
Gotcha. So let's say if I need back surgery, is there a risk for paralysis developing during or after this kind of surgery?
Well, it's operating rooms are dangerous places in some respects. So we as surgeons, we're familiar with the anatomy and the syndromes, and that's what our body of knowledge is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've learned through time and experience how to do things safely, but there's never a spine case in which you would say, guarantee you're not going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the risk of paralysis is very low, but it's not zero.
Right.
And it depends on the nature of the problem. You know, if you have a bad neurologic problem going into a case, say a badly pinched nerve or a badly pinched spinal cord, if you're already compromised, then you're going to be at a higher risk for catastrophe. Mm-hmm. We do all we can to avoid it through various principles of surgery and neuromonitoring that we do during surgery, but still it happens.
Right, yeah. And that's just the nature of it. So if I have surgery, well, we have Mary on the line. So Mary, we want to get to your question today.
Okay, how you doing?
Good.
My question is that I have pain at the lower right side of my back. It's more closer to my buttock.
Uh-huh.
But I was told it could be arthritis.
Okay.
Usually I would get the pain if I stand up fast or either if I bend over and stay working too long, bend over.
Right. Well, the pain in the rump or in the buttocks, you know, that's a most or very commonly a problem with your sciatic nerve, at least a partial problem. So, you know, do you have some arthritis pinching your sciatic nerve? That's probably pretty good safe bet. It's not a pure arthritis problem. It's how the problem with the arthritis with the pinched nerve is causing you a problem. So I would, again, you need a diagnosis before you got into the treatment. That's very important to get the proper diagnosis established. And then you can figure out what to do with it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, doctor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, thank you, Mary, for your question. And if you're just joining us and you have a question for our doctor today, our number is 318-219-4569. It's right there on your screen. And give us a call. Okay, so, you know, if let's say I have surgery, will I have any restrictions after the surgery? I'm assuming so. That's a pretty extensive part of your body.
Sure.
And so what would those restrictions be?
Well, typically, if we want you on take it easy mode for in the early postoperative period just to heal. And even a simple operation is going to kind of take the wind out of your sails for a month or so. And that's an uncomplicated one. But we need soft tissue healing. We want the healing process to get started. So it's be active, but not too active. For instance, walk and do light limbering exercises, but nothing extensive.
Mm-hmm.
Usually by the 4 to 6 week mark, if things are going okay, we'll have people step up and most people for these sort of things should see a therapist, I believe, mm-hmm. to kind of get started. Many of these patients don't even know how to exercise and how to move properly. And what, you know, if they're post-op and they touch the pain a little bit, sometimes those therapists have to kind of push them a little bit to get them to heal.
Right.
So it's a process over the course of 2 or 3 months that patients should be doing better, not usually completely healed, but by that time we have a pretty good idea how the case is going to go.
And do you see them in follow-up appointments after the surgery? Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
And so you said 2 to 3 months, they're, you know, not maybe 100%, but they are healing at that point. So how long would you say someone could resume all normal activities of daily living after an extensive back surgery?
Well, extensive back surgery is a relative term.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a hard topic.
Even a simple operation, say a discectomy, they still have to have a, you know, kind of a defined set of things to do physically so they don't re-rupture a disc.
Mm-hmm. So it's highly variable.
Highly variable. So, but even the simple ones require some physical retraining. The bigger ones where we're putting in screws and rods are usually on a slower path, but I think the important thing I try to get patients to do is activate. I mean, the whole goal of the surgery is to relieve pain, but also improve on their capacity to take care of themselves or their household or do some recreation or go walk in the community. A lot of people can't do that.
Right. Well, we have another viewer question, and Reynold is on the line. What is your question for our doctor today?
Yes, I had a problem with a 4 and 5 lumbar was out, and they were talking about doing a fusion, and I didn't do the fusion because I had the nerves were being pinched, so I did a decompression of the nerves first, and then the vertebrae fused together. So my question is how much pain am I going to have with the vertebrae fusing together? because I did the decompression of the back, and I'm still having trouble with it. But in the morning time when I get up, I feel like I got a brick in my back.
Huh.
So my question is how much pain am I going to have with the two, I guess, discs fusing together on their own?
Well, if they are truly fused together, that sometimes is a goal of surgery. So maybe Mother Nature fused them, and maybe the pain you're getting is not from those two bones being fused, but from something else.
We did a decompression,
right,
of the nerves,
mm-hmm,
and it seemed to help out. But every morning at 2:30 in the morning, I mean, I'm pacing the floors with the nerve problem, and then of course, so I got two problems here. I got one with the decompression, and then I got the other one with the vertebrae fused together.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if I'm...
It's hard to get you to a diagnosis over the phone when I'm not looking at you personally and looking at images, but it sounds like you might still have either a different problem at another level, or maybe a problem where you had surgery, but maybe it wasn't quite enough, which is always a judgment call on the surgeon's part. And none of us bat 1,000, so.
Right.
I'm
6 months into this thing now, going on 7 months. So, I mean, how long do you think it's either going to work or not going to work? 1 year, 6 months, a year and a half?
Well, hopefully, hopefully now you're better than you were pre-surgically. That's the first question to ask.
Somewhat.
Somewhat. And did you rehab? I mean, that's why we follow patients, is to see how things evolve. And I mean, the questions would become, did you have sufficient surgery? Was the right proper operation performed? Is there some other problem that's developed since then why you might not be doing as well as everybody hoped? Are you deconditioned?
Right.
Are you just weak? And sometimes that contributes
sure
to pain. So there's a lot of things to be considered. Maybe you had a good operation and you didn't rehab. There's all sorts of potential questions to ask in a situation like that. Nobody relishes the thought of doing the second operation, but that's why a surgeons should be tracking their post-op patients themselves to kind of know, as a gauge to your own skills.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing
well,
that
I
or not?
See him at, I'm going to see him at this coming month, and then I'll tell him what's going on. I just told him last time, I thought I needed more time, you know, and it was only 3 months, so now it's 6 months.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole significant amount of change.
Well, sometimes time alone doesn't manage things. Sometimes you have to do the therapies and, mm-hmm, and get with a therapist and work on strengthening.
Well, I asked about therapy, and he said, I prefer you not doing any bending or twisting.
Well, that doesn't mean you can't do therapy.
Well, I asked about therapy. He didn't say yeah, he didn't say no, he didn't say nothing. But I'll ask him again. It's going to be 7 months, so I guess I could start doing some therapy, I would think.
Well,
for him to tell me that.
Well, I think you certainly should abide with what your surgeon is telling you, but in general, most of these musculoskeletal procedures are accompanied by a therapist. And so I think the patients who tend to do better are the ones that get involved in therapy. That's been my observation in 30 years.
That's good.
Well, I'll call the doctor and ask him about it, because I think I do need some therapy. It does help out.
It often does.
All right. Thank you, Reynold, for your question. All right, we just have a couple more minutes here, and so talking about exercise and therapy, and this has come up a lot, do you think it's very important to exercise before ever getting to the point of needing surgery?
Well, I think, certainly, and in
yeah,
general, just as a part of health.
Right.
Exercise is fundamental.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think it can even help prevent someone from even getting to that point of surgery?
I think the mm-hmm, stronger you are, the stronger your muscles and tendons and things like that, the less likely you are to have musculoskeletal joint problems. The stronger mm-hmm, all the attachments are to your spine, the better off you'll be as we degenerate over time.
Right.
So if you think about a tower, one of your TV towers out on the, in the countryside, it's not just a tower sticking up out of the ground, it's surrounded by guy wires. And it put tension on those parts of the tower to keep them stable. And you can envision your muscles and tendons the same way. The stronger a person is, the less likely musculoskeletal problems are to get them.
That's a good imagery there. I love that. Awesome. Well, we have another question for you from Steve. Steve is on the line. What's your question?
Yes. My question is, I have severe pain in my neck on the left-hand side. I can't sleep. Well, it's hard for me to even take a nap in the daytime. I wake up and the pain is so excruciating. I can't ever at night get more than 4 hours sleep because of the severe pain in my neck. And I'm wondering what I need to do to get in contact with you and get some help. Thank you.
Well, I'd be happy to look at it. You talk to your physician and get a referral and come over. And we'll again start with an interview and an exam, and at least on that first visit, look at some plain old x-rays of your neck to see what's going on and get your history. But certainly what you're describing of nightly pain where you don't sleep soundly through the night is going to compound the rest of your health problems. The human brain needs 7 hours of sleep. Mm. And if you're not getting that, then you're not healing anything.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Steve. Well, it seems the common theme that we keep talking about is, you know, if you have this pain, if you're watching at home, or if you have neck pain, back pain, you know, get a referral from your physician, right?
Correct.
To someone like you. And so right. would that be something that they could ask, like, hey, I really want this referral. The referral is initiated, and then you have an appointment and go from there?
I think that's a good strategy.
Okay.
I mean, there are a number of very good spine health providers in town. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them.
Right.
And as surgeons, we are biased. We think we should have first look. I know that's a biased statement, but I think you need to look at a learned eye. And very often, we just say go to therapy, and very often the therapist helps them.
Right.
Or
so
they get an injection and then go to therapy and get over it. But I think you have somebody look at it with knowledge of how the spine works.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say that's limited to spine surgeons, but that's kind of our bias.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So getting a referral to someone like you or even a therapist to maybe manage their condition, and then in a session with you, they're going to have an interview and an x-ray, and you're going to look through the options, right? Maybe have a diagnosis, as you've said.
Right, and sometimes it's not evident the first time. Sometimes you scratch your heads a little bit and say, well, it's just, let's think of this and that. It's not always crystal clear what's going on.
Right, yeah, okay. Kind of a puzzle sometimes.
Sometimes, that's what makes it interesting.
Right, awesome. When you've been doing it for many, many years and you still enjoy work.
I do,
this?
I do,
awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, so tell us where we can find you. Where is Willis Knighton Spectrum, or do you have a phone number that someone could call if they're watching?
Well, it's a Willis Knighton physician. My office is at the North Campus in what's called the DNS building. Our number is 212-8115, and you'd speak with Ariel, who's our receptionist. And we have a nurse practitioner, a PA that works up patients. If you don't have a workup, we'll typically schedule you with the PA so that she can kind of get things set up to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how a lot of offices work.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. So this is good information. Give us your phone number, Willis Knighton Spectrum
Neurosurgery.
It's
212-8115.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time, Doctor.
I've
learned a lot about this, and you know, this affects a lot of people, so hopefully they'll be able to get in and
talk
with you. If not you, then someone else in the area. And that's a wrap for today's Healthline. Thanks again,
Thank
Dr.
You.
Reeves, for joining us.
Thank you.